From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Has anyone ever called you a tool, Joel? As in, you're such a tool, or...
I don't remember anybody doing that. If they do, they don't have any teeth anymore.
Well, that was my way of segueing clumsily into the idea of talking about tools. It's something that hams don't frequently discuss. You normally discuss your rig, your antenna, maybe your amplifier, but we don't normally get down to the actual tools that you have, should have, in your station. I know you have a lot to say about that.
Well, it's true, and I guess, you know, you hear more about test equipment than you do actual tools.
Absolutely.
And test equipment is kind of a subset of tools in a way. But, you know, there's an awful lot to say about tools. In fact, it could be the subject of a book. And, oh, by the way, I actually wrote such a book. Fairly, it's my most recent book, The Radio Amateur's Workshop, published by the ARL. So if you want to find out more about tools and test equipment, you can read about it in that book if you like. But there's no real simple answer here because there's so many different types of work that hams can do in their workshop. You know, the tools you need to build large HF Yagis are very different from what you need to build solid-state miniature circuit kinds of things. So, and of course, many hams have tools in all of the categories because they, at some time or another, do all of those things. And the tools last, how should I say it, the tools last much longer than your interest in one particular thing. So when you're done
That
job, they go in the drawer until you get a next, you know, 10 years later you decide to do another HF.
Yeah,
you open that drawer and the tools are still there and they're still working. So that's kind of a key point. Good tools last a long time, so to consider them an investment. Well, let's just start from the sort of basic common denominator here. Everybody needs basic hand tools. And of course, many people had them before they became hams because you also need hand tools to put the knobs back on the oven or tighten the hinges on the bathroom door,
sure,
or, you know, all those things. So, you know, everybody needs a good set of screwdrivers. You know, hams might go a little bit further in a couple directions. Like hams might need what are often termed jeweler's screwdrivers, the very small ones that are easy to turn with a finger grip on the top.
I have a set of those myself,
So that's very handy for a lot of things, including set screws and other kinds of things. Now, they're not good for alignment, even though the screws may fit. Best to use an insulated alignment tool.
I have to confess that I have found myself in a bind, and I have used the jeweler screwdrivers to align a coil. I know I shouldn't have done it, but it did work. But, yes, it's not proper procedure.
Well, there are a couple of problems with that. I've done that, too. The problems are, one, you can actually apply more force with that than some adjustments want to have applied to them. And the other is sometimes there's a voltage on what you're adjusting, and if it's a coil adjustment in a metal grounded can and the screwdriver shaft hits the side of the can where you insert it through a hole, you can actually cause some damage to that transformer by doing that. And I've done that too. So we've all made mistakes, but the idea is to try to minimize the number of mistakes.
Yes.
So hams need smaller things than you need for tightening a door hinge, but also some other things, such as Allen wrenches comes up in ham radio equipment. In addition to Allen wrenches, you probably want to have some of the torque wrenches that you can get as a separate socket fitting thing fits on the end of a socket tool, a quarter-inch socket tool, for example, and you can have a whole set of them that fits on that one handle. And those are frequently encountered in recent gear. And speaking of wrenches, something that most people don't have if they aren't in the radio business for some reason is what we used to call nut drivers. These are hex head drivers that look like screwdrivers, but instead of having a screwdriver on the end or a bit on the end, they have a wrench on the end. So you can fit them down into something and grab the nut that's holding a tube socket or some other kind of socket in place in a tightly packed chassis that you couldn't get to with some other kind of wrench. But, of course, for many applications, the combination wrenches, which have a box wrench on one end and an open end on the other, are a good choice. And it's good to have many of these things in both English and metric sizes because nowadays, nowadays, it's very likely that equipment is made in a country that uses metric. Going back to screwdrivers, the cross-headed screwdrivers, which we refer to as Phillips screwdrivers.
Phillips head screwdrivers, yeah, yes.
Often. Should actually say on the shaft, Phillips patent, and they should have a number 0, 1, 2, or 3, and probably having all of those is good. But something else to consider, and that is, for a long time, there were people who made screwdrivers that looked a lot like Phillips, but were not quite to the Phillips patent. We avoided them for a long time, but now it turns out that they're actually, radios made in Asia in particular have a different standard, and they tend to use that kind of screwdriver. So sometimes it's good to have some of those as well.
What's the screwdriver that has a head that looks like a star shape? And I've seen that on occasion. Are you familiar with that?
Now, you're thinking of the Torx?
Maybe I'm thinking of the Torx. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's started out, I think, in the automotive industry, but it's drifted off into lots of other places, including some radio work.
I've seen just a few, yeah. Yes.
One of my microphones is held together with Torx screws, for example. They're good to have as well. Now, in addition to screwdrivers and pliers and wrenches, and by the way, there's nothing as helpful in many cases as a good set of socket wrenches with a ratchet and extensions and so forth. Typically, for ham use, you'd find the quarter-inch drive sizes and the 3/8 inch drive sizes are about the most commonly used, although occasionally you'll need a half-inch drive, but more likely for your tire lug nuts than for a ham radio gear, but still.
Yeah, I want to see the one that requires that, yes.
Yeah. Sometimes, but I can imagine some antenna system pieces and tower pieces that would be using.
Well, that's true, yes.
Kind of heavy stuff like that.
Now, if you don't have a socket set, you can do what I do, that is have locking pliers. Otherwise, called vice grips.
Those are very handy, but the problem with with using them on hex nuts is eventually they turn into round nuts, which are very difficult yes. to use with anything else. So you're always better off using the proper size hex wrench or socket wrench to do those.
As opposed to what some call the Tennessee socket set. I have to say, I do use my vice grips quite a bit for antenna assembly, and I'm not recommending them for that. You're right, obviously, socket sets, vastly superior. But in a pinch, no pun intended,
yes, indeed.
The vice grips do come in handy.
Well, they come in handy in a lot of ways in addition to that, and I guess I try to avoid them on nuts, but because they can lock closed, sometimes you can get them to hold something even though you can't get your hand around there because of the
yes.
it starts to turn, the wrench will run into something and stop it, and you can actually use that to hold something. But if you hold it not on the threads or the hex part, but on the shaft part of a bolt that isn't threaded, that can be very handy and useful. So, you know, they can also be used as an emergency bench vice if you're careful not to crush what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Hold something in place on your workbench. And that's another thing good to have is some kind of a bench vise. In fact, I have a couple sizes of them. Some of them I can move. Some of them are bolted to the workbench, and I have a couple different categories of workbench, too, which is a whole different
yes.
level of stuff. But also, you can buy, and we'll find if you do a lot of small circuit board work, a device that holds the circuit board on your bench. So if you need two hands to do a soldering operation, you don't have to have your third hand holding the board in place, or try to do it with vice grips designed to the task, and a good job with that. And while you're there, you're going to need some pliers. And in addition
yes.
to vice grips, I guess the first kind most people have are long nose pliers, and then diagonal wire cutter, next kind of thing. And then a couple sizes. You don't want to try to use a cutter that's designed for number 30 wire to cut number 12 household wire too many times, because it won't after a while. A set of lineman pliers is often handy. In fact, I have them in a couple different sizes. They allow you to go and grab something from the end right up against the chassis. The old traditional, what we used to call gas pliers, the little slip joint pliers that there's always a pair in the kitchen drawer someplace, I find those very useful in getting that little bit of a snug on a UHF connector, particularly one that's mounted outside. If you don't give that last little snug on the back shell, you'll find that the back shell has worked its way loose and you get intermittent conditions and all kinds of problems.
Now, I shouldn't use my vice grips to do that, right?
Well, you have to be very careful that you don't snap them shut, and you can crush that back shell if it's off the connector. So, you know, you have to be a little careful here. But in fact, I just used some the other day. I had an outside panel. I was just taking a cable off because we're going to have some construction work done, tripping over some of my cables out in the yard. By the way, the reason I didn't use the gas pliers was I couldn't find my gas pliers. So it's good to have a place where you put everything so you find it ready. And the next category of things that most hams need to use is soldering equipment. Back when I started, what we always used was a dual heat soldering gun that typically was 100 or 140 watts. And that was great for wires on point-to-point wired chassis with vacuum tube equipment going from a tube socket to a terminal strip. We had plenty of room, and things were big enough to handle that much heat without a problem. Today, that's almost never used on equipment. Almost always requires a very tightly controlled, small-tipped soldering station, preferably thermostatically controlled, but at least adjustable. You can get the right temperature, you can get right in there with a point, and you just get the solder where you want it. There's nothing worse than trying to solder a pin of a 16-pin integrated circuit and have the solder go all over the five pins on each side. And
now, you wouldn't do that with a soldering gun, I take it.
Not more than once. I think once would be enough. Now, and the problem is not only do you get solder all over the place, in the process of doing that, you'll find the foil on the printed circuit board will curl up and separate, and you sort of have to start over.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back. I have one more item about tools, but let's hear from DX Engineering.
All right.
Our fellow hams have told us how much they love receiving the DX Engineering catalog. It's 132 pages of amateur radio heaven, packed with competitively priced equipment. You'll find everything from multiband Yagis to whip antennas, the latest bass transceivers to mobile radios, and every accessory under the sun. But the catalog only represents a small part of what DX Engineering offers. When you visit dxengineering.com, you'll find thousands of items from trusted names like ICOM, Yaesu, Kenwood, and Elenco. There's world-famous antennas from OptiBeam, E-Antennas, and M-Squared, Rhone and American Towers, plus many more. And shop a wide selection of innovative DX Engineering brand products. They're designed and manufactured by our team of amateur radio enthusiasts for hams just like you. Plus, you get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Experience ham radio heaven at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back, Joel. And during the break, you happened to remember something that we were starting to talk about. But
yes, I guess it escaped me at that moment. We were talking about Allen wrenches, and there's another kind of wrench that looks just like an Allen wrench, but has a slightly different head pattern or spline pattern. It's called a Bristol wrench. I survived for many years without Bristol wrenches until I got my first piece of old Collins equipment. For some reason, Collins seemed to use Bristol wrenches for their set screws, and I'm sure there are other people that do as well because people have been copying Collins for years. So, you know, there's another set of those around. So that was what.
Can you still buy those?
You can. I don't know where. I guess I bought some. You go to the usual place and you type in Bristol wrench. And
Bristol wrench.
You'll find lots of people will offer you sets of.
Well, I was going to bring up something also about tools. And would you consider a magnifying glass as a tool that one should have? I do, because in my early 60s now, I'm having a hard time, let's say, reading the numbers on small ceramic disc capacitors, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I would say that's definitely a tool or a construction aid also,
yes.
Because it's a very difficult for me, and my eyes are even older than yours, but even before they became that old, it just things get very small when you're working on miniature circuits. And if you're trying to solder a pin or see where the little whiskers on the end of a stranded wire are getting to on a miniature connection arrangement on a PC board, you really need a vision aid that will allow you to see in more detail with higher resolution. Focusing closer in. And I guess there are different ways of doing it. I guess the kind I use is a visor arrangement that makes me look like Darth Vader or something, but goes over my head and slides down over my glasses and allows me to focus at very close distances. Some people prefer the kind that has a circular fluorescent light around it and
a lens
in the middle. And this allows the light to be applied separately so they're not tied together, which can be an advantage, I think. But you need something like that. I have even seen, there have been some articles in QSD in which people have used miniature electronic cameras and looked at the layout of a board or something on their computer monitor. And that can be very useful, too, although many times it's easier to work on something if the object you're working on is where you're looking. So if you're looking at the computer screen and the thing you're working on is on the workbench in front of you, your eyes have to go back and forth and readjust somewhat. But it certainly can help you see what you've done, and perhaps as a quality control measure at the end to go double check everything. But you ought to have something available to allow you to get in closer.
Now, in your toolbox, do you also have a blade of any kind? Like a, again, I'm going to invoke a brand name here, X-Acto knife?
I do.
You know what I mean.
I do have a set of those. I have a set of X-Acto knives. I have some single-edged razor blades. I have a pocket knife. As a sailor, I always have a pocket knife in my pocket. It's got a couple of different blades. And some
except
of them,
when you're going through airport security, then
that's right. I've made that mistake a few times. But, yeah, I usually make sure those are in checked baggage. And I try to avoid airport security at all costs by not taking airplanes when I can avoid them. But in any event, it's very good to have a knife or two available. The one I have has a two screwdriver blades, a very compact. It's actually made by the Swiss Army people, but isn't one with the red handles. It's a very thin item with a single sharp blade. It has two screwdriver blades and a can opener. One of the screwdriver blades is thin enough that it'll actually work with a Phillips screw if you're in desperate straits, and the other one is sort of a more standard one. It's not ideal for anything that it does, but because it's always in my pocket, I always have that available. So I'm a firm believer in edge tools. They can be very helpful.
Certainly. Now, I have something unusual for you. I have a good dentist, one that I've been seeing for the last 15 years, like the guy a lot, and he provided, as a gift, I think there were three or four what I call dental picks that they use while cleaning your teeth.
Yep.
And those were wonderful for getting into small spaces on circuit boards, that sort of thing. Is there a more common equivalent of that kind of tool?
Well, it's interesting you mention that because I have a similar, from a similar kind of source, I have some, I think they're called forceps or clamps.
Oh, yeah. And or those, hemostats.
Hemostats. I have a couple different sizes of them. And there's nothing like dropping a lock washer into the middle of your transceiver and trying to get it out. And of course, if you tip it upside down to shake it, it'll slide to some place where it gets stuck forever.
Of course.
Until it blows up one day. And those are just perfect for going in and retrieving something like that. So I recommend them. I mean, we can go on and on with things. There's just so many. And I'm sure it's possible to buy these things, but they probably cost a lot more new and sterile than they do after they've been kicking around for a while. So, talk to your doctor or your dentist. See, I'm sure they go through these things fairly frequently. And rather than have them toss them out, have them keep them for you.
My dentist gave me those picks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Stainless steel, beautiful. And I've had them for years. So, okay. Are you ready for a question, Joel?
I am.
We have a question, but before we do, Joel, you are going to answer another question. It's completely different.
That's true. Actually, what I'm doing is responding to a suggestion that was made. I get a lot of email, and you're welcome. I do get a lot. But I got one recently from frequent QST author Steve Lawrence, WRSE. He frequently writes about antenna construction and so forth, and it does a lot of that work. And he had a comment on our rotator discussion that we had on August 2nd. Steve points out that I didn't mention something that I should have, which is that before installing a rotator on the top of your tower and putting an antenna on top of it, check it out on the bench with the control box and the cable you're actually going to use. Make sure all three things work together, including any connector arrangements you plan to put between them. He mentioned that because he recently got a new rotator, and even though it came with all kinds of quality control stamps, when he checked it out on the bench, he found it dead on arrival. The motor did not turn. And it's just so much easier to replace that before it's up on the tower with all the stuff connected up with the heavy-duty wrenches. So we thank Steve for that tip.
Okay. And here's your question. This one happens to come from Dick, KH6RE, and he's asking, at the end of your discussion about the G5RV multiband dipole antenna in your June 2018 Doctor Is In column in QST, you mentioned that you brought the window line all the way from the 101-foot dipole to the indoor antenna tuner. My tuner has just coaxial connectors. Is a balun required at the tuner to make this connection?
Well, that's a good question. And a balun or a common mode choke is recommended any time you need to make the transition between balanced and unbalanced. Just a good idea. Including at the antenna itself, if you go to the coax connect the dipole, you want a balun there. there because that keeps the common mode current off outside of the shield where it can get into trouble. So the same thing should happen at the bottom of the G5 RV's window line matching section going to coax. And many people who offer those include that, typically called a K2AU.
Oh, W2AU.
W2AU. Yes. Walt Maxwell's idea of a common mode choke, multiple beads on the coax, which is easy to do and quite effective if you have enough. But if you move that transition from out in the backyard to your tuner, you definitely want to have it there too, because otherwise part of the current coming out of the antenna tuner will go onto the chassis of the antenna tuner and from there to the chassis of the radio, and it'll tend to light up your whole shack. The amount that you'll have there depends on the relative lengths of different things, your ground wire and your coax or your window line. The common mode length that's available there. But on a multiband antenna, the chances are on at least some bands you'll have a fairly serious problem. And the problem can be as simple as you feel it on the whiskers in the back of your hand when you go past the radio, or you curl your mustache when you try to talk into the microphone. But it can get a lot worse than that. It can also lock up your transmitter. You start talking and with Vox, and it starts transmitting, and it never stops transmitting until you unplug the whole thing. That's happened to me. Perhaps more subtle is that also implies that all of those wires and things are actually part of your antenna system. And what that means is you'll be radiating from them into your household wiring and also any household noisy appliances that you wouldn't hear if they were in the house and your antenna and everything were outside and there was no pickup on anything on your transmission line. All of that will pick up and you'll hear your washing machine, which you wouldn't hear otherwise. So yeah, always a good idea to have a device to make that transition. Now, in an emergency or until you get one from the vendor, try it. You can put it on, and you may be able to get away with it. It will work. Some of the energy will go into the antenna. But keep in mind that any energy that goes onto your radio equipment or around your shack is energy that is not radiating where you want it. So it's always a good idea to keep the signals where you want them, and it works on both transmit and receive.
Thank you, Joel.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.